We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Yes! Oh, it is. It is! The Alex Dono Show here on WQAM. Sorry, that was a really rigorous yes.
You all right?
No, man. I'm not. Lack of sleep. Although, we're only on for 2 hours tonight, so I'll have to bring it strong. We will have Cleveland Browns hosting the New York Jets on these airwaves tonight. 8 o'clock start time here on the radio station. So, I'm with you guys until 8 p.m. It is the Alex Dono Show here on WQAM. If you'd like to get in, share your infinite wisdom with us via the phone lines. 305-567-0560. 954-567-0560. Or get at us on the Kendall Toyota and West Kendall Toyota text line at 56022. But please don't text and drive. I'm excited for something we're going to do in the 7 o'clock hour. 7:20 tonight. Our Dono's top three list this evening. I guarantee you that Tito Benach and I are going to make some people very angry. Right? I've noticed something on these airwaves. Right? I think the one thing that gets people more fired up than political talk, which I don't do a whole lot of, you know that, right? There's one thing that gets people more fired up than politics. Something we're going to rank in the 7 o'clock hour will probably upset, maybe offend some of you more than anything I can possibly say tonight about the Miami Hurricanes or the FIU Panthers or the Miami Dolphins or the Miami Heat. When we rank for you, Tito and I, our top three most overrated foods at 7:20, friends will be lost, feelings will be hurt, bridges will be burned. I don't know, Tito, I feel like we might lose some listeners tonight. Is it worth it?
Oh, it's so worth it because we're doing the service to people that they need to hear this. Like, it's time that the truth comes out, Dono, and that's what we're going to do tonight. A lot of foolishness planned for the 7 o'clock hour.
And I'll tell you, like I tweeted out a teaser like 6 or 7 minutes ago that I guarantee that Tito Benach and I will make some people mad in the 7 o'clock hour this evening. And the first response that I got was pretty damn close. Adam Smoot tweeted, "Are you drafting ice cream flavors?" I would venture to say that our top three list of most overrated foods will probably piss more people off than if we were trying to draft ice cream flavors. And by the way, my top three ice cream flavors, hazelnut number one.
What?
Oh, if you've ever tried authentic hazelnut gelato, it's so good.
We're talking ice cream, though, not gelato.
That is ice cream. That's the Italian word for ice cream. That's ice cream.
I'm going to have to confirm that.
Hazelnut ice cream, that's number one. I'd go with like a dark chocolate as a number two. And a nice chunky stracciatella is number three. There you have it.
That was massively infuriating. We're already off.
I'm already pissing people off. So listen, there's nothing I can say tonight, sports related, that's going to make people as angry as some of these food topics. But, you know, a couple things. I got some thoughts on the Dolphins. I have some thoughts on the Canes tonight. And I know there's been some bad injury news this week for the Canes. You look at where the Dolphins are at 2 weeks into the year. And they will probably go 3-0 this Sunday before facing New England in week four. I say probably because nothing is guaranteed as a Miami Dolphins fan. We know that, right? You can play that's the win, that's a loss game, and it'll make your head spin with this team. But at wide receiver, keep this in mind. Not only do we not miss DeVante Parker, who's yet to actually suit up and play, we don't miss Jarvis Landry right now either. Let's not forget about that. Let's not forget about he who shall not be named, who will be, I think he is playing tonight. He was questionable, but I think he is going to play tonight at home when the Browns take on the New York Jets. And I'll tell you the reason why we are not missing these guys right now, and obviously DeVante Parker eventually is going to play, Adam Gase was very vague on that today or yesterday. No, today, when he was asked about it by the media. We'll see, was his response when asked about whether or not Devontae Parker is going to play this week. Well, the reason why you're not missing Devontae Parker right now and why you haven't missed Jarvis Landry yet. Albert Wilson, to me, biggest revelation so far in this Dolphins offense. I mean, that guy is Tyreek Hill light. And I mean that as a compliment. And you think about how far we've come now with Albert Wilson since preseason. I can remember there being like a 5-minute Q&A during training camp between Armando Salguero and Adam Gase, where Armando was imploring Gase to explain to him, where does Albert Wilson fit on this team? Is he a slot receiver? Is he a boundary guy? Is he going to play? Is he behind Devontae Parker on the depth chart? How is he going to help this team? And that answer has been, that question has been answered right now in flying colors by Albert Wilson. And some of that has to do with Devontae Parker being hurt and clearing the runway for him. But this is a guy, you get him in space, he can make so many people miss. The move that he put on that Jets defender this past Sunday, something I've watched that touchdown back, that 19-yard touchdown, whatever it was, 7 or 8 times back since that play. That was awesome. Only 2 games in, that question has been answered, that Albert Wilson is going to be tremendously valuable to this team. It didn't really rear its ugly head on Sunday, this past Sunday, but I still am concerned that the loss of Josh Sitton at left guard is going to hurt this team, especially in run blocking. Right, I think that's something to watch out for during the course of the season. Ted Larson, not a bad player. Ted Larson is a veteran. Ted Larson has played with these guys before. He was on this team last year. He practiced a lot when Sitton was getting veteran days off. I'm not saying the offensive line is going to crumble at any point this year, barring further injuries, but I just thought the opportunity of having a solid Pro Bowl caliber guy like Josh Sitton opening up holes in the running game is something the Dolphins are going to miss throughout this year. You know, Adam H. Beasley wrote a story about this guy today, and so some Dolphin fans have been tweeting about him. I wonder, how long will Charles Harris continue to be on scholarship from the fan base? Still only 2 career sacks for this guy. Now, Miami's D-line was dominant against the Jets. 9 tackles for a loss on Sunday, but Harris didn't really do anything. Right, you're talking about a guy who was a 22nd overall pick a couple of years ago. I think he's getting a pass right now, because Cam Wake and Robert Quinn have been so good. But an honest question, at what point, 560-22 on the Kendall Toyota, West Kendall Toyota text line, at what point do you start to put Charles Harris under the microscope and really demand more from that guy? He says all the right things. I'll give him credit, right? And anytime you ask Adam Gase about Charles Harris, he's really playing well. Maybe he's not impacting the stat sheet, but he's doing his job correctly. Maybe a lot of that is true. Maybe some of it is covering for the guy. But you didn't draft Charles Harris 22nd overall 2 years ago to be a guy who just does his job and doesn't show up on the stat sheet. You drafted him to sack Tom Brady. That is why you drafted Charles Harris. You drafted Charles Harris to make the lives of Tommy Brady and now Sam Darnold and Josh Allen, you drafted him to make their lives miserable. And so far, only 2 sacks now in a year plus of career games in the NFL. You think about some of the other guys that have been drafted highly that came under pressure a lot more quickly. Devontae Parker, you know, he started to get under pressure by the fan base, what, second year? Maybe late in his rookie season? Laremy Tunsil got some pressure last year in his second year. Struggled at guard a bit, right? Jordan Phillips, not even a first-round pick. He gets ripped mercilessly by the fan base. And okay, he deserves it a lot more than Charles Harris because for Charles Harris, like I get this one because even when Harris isn't making big plays in games, he's not complaining. He's saying all the right things again. He's very good with the media. He's not going after reporters on Twitter. He's not, you know, missing meetings and being irresponsible. Maybe some of the things that you accuse Jordan Phillips of, he lacks maturity. So I think the way he's handled himself has probably bought Charles Harris a little bit of a pass with the fan base. And thank goodness, defensive end is a position where the Dolphins are already stacked, right? If he was a defensive tackle, he'd probably be under a lot more pressure. But at defensive end, he's been able to coast a little bit. He's been on scholarship. Yeah, on the Canes, I'm surprised that this hasn't been a bigger story, to be honest with you. Malik Rozier, how Yeah, he scored a 37-yard rushing touchdown against Toledo, and that's when he got into the end zone, and he did the shushing motion. He did the gesture, shh, to quiet the fan base. Now, with the game being at Toledo, of course, you're instantly thinking, oh, this is great. Miami just scored a back-breaking touchdown. He's silencing the Toledo crowd. He admitted after the game that that gesture wasn't just for Toledo's fans. It was also for Miami's fans. That tells me that Malik Rozier has no issue essentially playing a game of chicken with Miami's fans, right? Almost daring you. Be negative. I don't deserve it. I'm going to prove all of you wrong. I'm guessing that's a motivational tactic. I'm hoping it's not a situation where he's putting so much pressure on himself. Because remember, you know, Miami, they're back home this Saturday against FIU, a game they should win easily. They're favored by about 4 touchdowns. Should beat North Carolina, you know, Florida State at home in a couple of weeks. Another game Miami's going to be probably a hefty favorite in, given how bad the Seminoles have looked. I wonder if Malik Rozier is putting even more pressure that he doesn't need on his shoulders, because with him essentially challenging the fan base and talking about silencing Miami's fans who have booed him when he's not played well, he does struggle again. If and when he does struggle at home, do those boos only get louder now that he's essentially offered a challenge to the fan base? I mean, listen, if he ends up playing every week the way that he played against Toledo, where he had a great game on Saturday, I take nothing away from that. Over 200 yards passing, 5 total touchdowns scored. If he continues to play the way he played against Toledo, or if he can play the way that he played against Notre Dame last year, you give me performances like that on a consistent basis, nobody's going to boo you. Nobody. I can remember Brock Berlin's first year at Miami getting a lot of boos. He ended up playing his way out of it. The fans liked him by the time he was gone. Right? I mean, obviously, he's not a cult hero. He wasn't Ken Dorsey. But they stopped booing him because he earned it on the field. Right? I think Malik Rozier has put himself in a situation where, sure, if you continue to play the way you played against Toledo, where you were relatively accurate, efficient, prolific, you scored a ton of touchdowns, you got Miami, you were accurate on your deep passes. If you can continue to play like that, score and win, the boos will stop. But has he put more pressure on himself now, right? Look, let's say he goes out there against Florida State and really struggles, can't convert third downs, throws interceptions. Do the boos only get louder now that he's added extra pressure on himself?
I'm surprised there hasn't been, I mean, there was booing at the Savannah State game.
Right. There yeah, I mean, like, he had a bad throw on third down, 3rd and 5. He got booed.
Yeah, so I just think, like, Malik has kind of dug himself a hole here, obviously, because people want to see him play better.
Right.
And even if you watch the game tape against Toledo, there are throws that were not good throws.
Sure, yeah. I mean, he's never going to be a pinpoint accurate quarterback, right? Like you want Malik Rozier to make big, timely throws and big, timely runs, right? He's never going to be 70, 75% accurate. He's never going to have a perfect arm. But as long as he can avoid the really bad mistakes, the turnovers, and just the awful throws on third down, I don't boo the guy now, but fans will stop booing the guy is what I'm saying.
Yeah, so, like, are you trying to say that he should be just more of a game manager, if anything, rather than try to be a QB that he's just not?
Yeah, I think that's always when you have this kind of talent around you. I mean, Amon Richards is not going to play this Saturday, and you don't even feel like you need the guy. I mean, Jaquan Johnson, a different story. I want Jaquan Johnson out there for every snap of every game. Unless you're playing Savannah State, then I don't care. But I think Jaquan Johnson on defense, you're going to miss him this weekend. I'm not saying Amon Richards, if he can return to freshman form, of course he can help this team. But if you've seen what Jeff Thomas is doing out there, it makes you miss Amon Richards a little bit less, right? Malik Rozier has so much talent to throw the football to and hand the football off to. DJ Dallas has been just a revelation for Miami. He's been Miami's best running back so far this year. Yeah, he doesn't have to be Brad Kaya, right? I mean, Brad Kaya, compared to what Malik Rozier has around him, Brad Kaya, for most of his Miami career, had inferior talent around him. And an inferior defense, especially, right? So you were having to get into shootouts with other teams, right? Like Brad Kaya, you had to tell him, Brad, we need you to win this game for us because our defense is terrible and we don't have the type of talent around you that we now have around Malik Rozier. Malik Rozier shouldn't be in those situations where he has to try and do what Brad Kaya tried to do to win games single-handedly.
Somebody made a point to me the other day, because I'm of the opinion that when you didn't give Brad Kaya elite weapons, he became more of an average quarterback than people gave him credit for.
Mm.
But that freshman year, he had an NFL offensive line in front of him with Eric Flowers, Feliciano, Shane McDermott, guys like that.
Yeah.
And he also had Philip Dorsett,
yeah,
Clive Walford, Alan Hearns. So those were all NFL players, and he put up ridiculous numbers that year. So had you been able to maybe pair Kaya with the receiving core that he has now, I think his numbers would have been a lot more representative of the type of QB he was.
560-22 is how you get at us on the Kendall Toyota, West Kendall Toyota text line. So in addition to just making people angry in the 7 o'clock hour with our food takes, 640, we're going to talk some NBA with Tim Bontemps from the Washington Post. Not only has he been, of course, following the Jimmy Butler saga, I mean, Minnesota Timberwolves look like they are crumbling before our very eyes, man. And he also covered this Mark Cuban situation with the Dallas Mavericks culture. I want to get into some of that as well. 7 o'clock, we will talk some Canes with Andrew Ivins from 247 Sports. So I'm looking forward to getting the breakdown on Miami FIU. I got to give some love to our buddy Solana, right, for sticking up
absolutely
for FIU students and alums who cheer for the Miami Hurricanes. I got to give him some credit for that. The Alex Dono Show continues here on QAM.
Radio.com. Radio.com.
Yeah, two games into this Miami Dolphins season. If I ask you to describe Ryan Tannehill's performance so far, eight quarters in, one word, what would you use there? I'd probably go with solid. Like, I wouldn't say spectacular. I certainly wouldn't say bad. I wouldn't say great. I would say solid. I think Ryan Tannehill's been solid, so he's doing his job.
Sufficient.
Okay, I think that, yeah, also applies.
It's like,
right,
a synonym of what you just said. Like,
sufficient.
But yes, like, just enough.
Right. I mean, you certainly can't say he's been subpar or bad, because you're probably not 2-0 at this point if he'd been subpar, right? I mean, if you got Jay Cutler of last year, you did start 1-0 last year with Cutler. You'd probably be 1-1 at best with Cutler again this year. Here's what Pro Football Focus has to say about Tannehill so far. Props to our guy, Antoine Staley, from DolphinsWire.com for passing this along. Dolphins are 2-0 after the first 2 weeks of the 2018 season, and a lot of that has to do with the play of Ryan Tannehill. While his quarterback rating is one of the best at his position, Pro Football Focus doesn't have Tannehill among the top 15 quarterbacks in the league. Oh, for the Tannehill haters, more ammunition, right? For the Tannehill haters, oh, this is a mirage. Sure, they're 2-0 now, but they're going to be, 2-5 in a couple of weeks, you're probably thinking. I mean, I will point out, to be fair to the Tannehill haters, the Dolphins had a 3-0 start back in 2013, and they went 8-8 that year. That was the year that you couldn't beat either the Jets or the Bills to end the year.
Jets played with their third-string quarterback both times they beat the Dolphins.
Right. And, didn't we face Thaddeus Lewis twice?
Beat us both
times. With the Bills? Yeah, that was bad. That was really bad. So 2 weeks into the season, Pro Football Focus. I have a love-hate relationship with Pro Football Focus. I'll be completely honest with you. If Pro Football Focus puts out a stat that I like, I will use that to support an argument. If they put out a stat I don't like, I will rip it. Every radio host does this. Worst kept secret in sports, right? You will hear this from every sports radio show in America. If you're trying to articulate to people how well a certain cornerback, especially a certain offensive lineman, because there aren't a whole lot of stats to really show people at that position how well someone is doing. So I think you rely heavily on Pro Football Focus, their advanced metrics, to describe how well or how poorly an offensive lineman is playing. If they publish a stat that we like, talk radio hosts will use that to support an argument. If they publish a stat we don't like, we rip it. That's just how it works in this business. But 2 weeks into the season, Pro Football Focus has graded out Tannehill at a 68.2, which ranks him number 19 at his position. This is part of the quote on that. Tannehill has been relatively safe with the ball, throwing a big time throw just twice while throwing short of the first down markers on 60.8% of his passes. Well, listen, I mean, to me, that tells me Tannehill is taking what is being given to him and that Tannehill is playing in a style probably tailored towards avoiding mistakes, right? I still feel like if the situations call for it, because the Dolphins have been playing with a lot of leads the past couple of weeks, if the situation calls for it, I believe Tannehill can be better by these Pro Football Focus metrics than number 19 at his position, right? I still think that that sort of improvement could be in the cards for him. But give me one word to describe Tannehill so far. 560-22. Here we go. Efficient comes in. Average comes in. If I could give you three words, I would say slightly above average, which is usually where we're at with that guy. Oh, and another thing we have in the 7 o'clock hour, Tito Banach made just a masterful musical tribute to Ryan Tannehill. I don't know, Tito, I feel like since we're talking about Tannehill right now,
just play it now?
I think we should play it early.
Okay, hold on.
It's not to say we can't play it again in the 7 o'clock hour. We will. But I feel like with all the time that Tito spent on this, like I'm thinking this had to have been like a Bon Jovi-type studio sesh. Like he was in there for 13, 14 hours just grinding, right? Like you had like I'm trying to think of like a great music producer. Timbaland, is he still a thing?
Yeah, he is.
So you had like Timbaland in the studio. Am I even pronouncing that correctly?
Yeah, you got it.
Timbaland. I wanted to make sure I wasn't saying Timberland like the boots. So he had Timberland back in studio with him, just spending like three, four days, no sleep whatsoever. Here is Tito Banach. Have you ever published a song on this radio station before?
No, I don't think I have, actually.
So this is your musical debut.
Oh, man, now I'm nervous.
Wow, right. What are some of the great debut albums in history? Eminem's, yeah, what was it, the Slim Shady LP?
Yeah, his is pretty good.
That was a great debut.
Yeah, I don't know. I think this ranks up there. I wouldn't be ashamed of it.
Here is Tito Banach, our own Tito Banach, with a tribute to Ryan Tannehill. I'm liking it. I'm liking the beat. Did you lay this down or Timbaland lay this down?
Ryan Tannehill. Ryan Tannehill. Ryan Tannehill. Ryan Tannehill.
Oh, you went high octave there.
Woo. Ryan Tannehill. Ryan Tannehill. Ryan Tannehill. I had to make this song because, you know, he's played so well. Everybody was ragging on my boy, RT17, you know? So it's only right that we do this, Donovan.
I love how you just said he's playing so well, but 3 minutes ago you used the one word sufficient to describe him. Can we get, somebody's got to know the DJ at Hard Rock Stadium. Like, anytime Tannehill throws a touchdown, can they play this? And because
Ryan Tannehill.
My vision for this is, I think we can make
Ryan Tannehill.
This could be the Miami Dolphins version of Seven Nation Army. Like, honestly, like, you think about how fun it is. At Heat games, we should be able to get the entirety of Hard Rock Stadium, 60,000 plus people all chanting in unison, Ryan Tannehill.
It's catchy. It gets people pumped. That whole song, I've told you, this was like a soccer.
Yeah.
The people in the soccer world, they take this song and they apply it for whoever has the same number of syllables. And Ryan Tannehill just happened to work perfectly.
Wow, the first text that came in, awful song. Tough crowd out there.
Tough crowd.
Oh, man. I don't know, man. I'm thinking we could get that going. Like, we got to get out to the DJ at Hard Rock Stadium. I want to hear that play. Anytime he throws a touchdown, like, forget about the Dolphin fight song for a couple of games.
That's outdated anyways,
just
yeah.
Just blast this. Ryan Tannehill. I think we could make that a thing, man. Tannehill is our David Woodley texter, right? It's time to get our Marino. Well, listen, we've been saying that for damn near 20 years at this point. 560-22 on the Kendall Toyota, West Kendall Toyota text line. You can get in via the phone lines at 305 567-0560. Wow, another text comes in. That's so cringeworthy. It's made me pucker. I really thought people would like, I'll be honest, when you, a couple hours ago, when you played that in studio for me, I really found it to be catchy, right? Because there are two different ways as a host that I can handle this. We would have played it on the air no matter what, but there are two different ways I could have handled it. If I genuinely thought it was awful, of course I would have said, that's great, play it, so then I could make fun of you. So I knew that was a possibility going in, right? But instead, when I heard it, I thought, you know what, that's catchy enough. I think we can make this a thing. So
I think it's good. You know, well, we can lead into another segment so people get another taste.
Here we go. Texter writes in, where can I download this fire?
That's the type of user I need. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's the type. That's probably.
Play it again.
The new Tannehill anthem. It's simple, but it's magnificent in its simplicity. Picture this. 70-yard bomb to Kenny Stills, right? Hard Rock Stadium is on fire. We need something to chant. We need a hero. We have Tito's own.
Ryan Tannehill.
To that man.
Ryan Tannehill.
Ryan Tannehill. Ryan Tannehill.
I like when you go up there. Climb up that ladder.
Ryan Tannehill.
Bring it to us, Tito. Pick that high-hanging fruit.
Ryan Tannehill.
Call a drink of water.
Ryan Tannehill.
Here's another text critique. Two more came in. I'm a Tannehill fan, and I must say, don't ever play that cringeworthy song ever again. Another text comes in. Dope song, bro. RT17, baby.
So mixed reviews thus far. I mean, this means basically people like it.
These are the most mixed reviews I've ever seen. The music is catchy, but the vocals need a retake. Good luck. I picture him saying good luck like, what was the creepy guy from the movie Taken? Like the abductor guy? Good luck.
I've never seen that movie.
You haven't seen Taken?
Yeah, I have not.
How is that possible?
Well, I've never seen any of the Godfathers either. So.
Yeah, but I can understand that because you're like 25. How old are you?
23.
Wow. Okay, so I'm mad at you for not having seen The Godfather, but I can understand. But, I mean, Taken was made like less than 10 years ago, and it's on like FX and FX movies like every 3 minutes.
I probably should have seen it, but I felt like after they made like 5 Takens, I was like, you know what? This series in general probably
just watch the first one. Where can I download it immediately? Texter writes. It's horse bleep. Another text writes. This is split down the middle, man. It's better than the TI nonsense they play at the stadium. Okay. Well, Jimmy Butler, could he be on his way to the American Airlines Arena? We'll talk with Tim Bontemps from the Washington Post next here on QAM.
Radio.com. Radio.com.
Our next guest is a national NBA writer for the Washington Post. Tim Bontemps joins us now on the Toyota of Hollywood hotline. And obviously, Jimmy Butler has been a very hot name these last couple of days with a story about him looking for a trade. So, Tim, first and foremost, how you doing tonight, sir?
Doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. And I got to ask you, with this Jimmy Butler stuff, what does this say about the state of the Minnesota Timberwolves? And could Tom Thibodeau maybe even look for a way out of there at this point?
Well, I mean, look, it says that the state of the Timberwolves is not great. I mean, you see all the stuff on social media yesterday, obviously on top of the trade demand from Jimmy Butler, the fact that Karl Towns hasn't signed his, extension yet. There's not a lot of good stuff coming out of Minnesota right now. That being said, you know, it would not at all surprise me if Jimmy just winds up playing out the year with the Wolves. I don't see Tom Thibodeau being willing to trade him. And you know, at this point, I think if they're not going to be able to get the kind of trade I can't imagine they're going to want for him right now. And I think they're probably better off just trying to run this thing back and, seeing how it goes for a while and then reassess it maybe in a couple months if things don't go very well.
So with that said, there are a lot of NBA fan bases out there who are clamming for an opportunity at Jimmy Butler. So based on what you're saying about what Minnesota probably will not be doing here in a hurry, do you think maybe this story is being, overblown just a bit?
No, I mean, it's. I don't think anybody has overblown anything. I mean, the guy doesn't want to be in Minnesota. I mean, that, you know, he. If you sit down with the guy who's running the team and say, "Hey, I want out of here," I mean, that's a story, especially right. when you're a four-time All-Star and a really good player, right? The difference is, it's not like Jimmy Butler can wave a magic wand and say, "All right, I'm out of here, and I'm going to go play for the Lakers today,
right?
Or the Clippers, or the Nets, like, or the Heat." Like, he can't just do anything. He can't just leave. I mean, I guess he could not show up, but I don't think he's going to do that. So my guess is they're going to say, "Hey, look, let's see how this goes for a while, and maybe he'll just go into free agency next summer. Maybe he'll, you know, maybe we'll trade you in a couple months once more players can get traded on December 15th. But you know, I think right now he's probably just going to have to sit tight and wait. And look, I mean, Jimmy also, I could also not, you know, you look at the three teams that have been, you know, that he wants to play for right now, the Clippers, the Nets, and the Knicks. All of them could sign a max guy next summer. So there's not a lot of not a lot of need for them to give up assets and players right now to get him, right? Mm-hmm. And this is a guy who has missed a lot of games due to injury the past few years. There's nobody who's a bigger Jimmy Butler fan than me in terms of the way he plays and his impact when he's on the court. I mean, he's a terrific player and he's got an incredible story. But at the same time, he's a guy who's had a lot of injuries and he's approaching 30. He might even be 30.
Right.
And if you're going to pay that guy a lot of money over a lot of years, I think he needs to be healthy this year. So, you know, look, this is clearly a messy situation on all sides. It's not going to get resolved, I don't think, anytime soon. And, you know, given how many balls are in the air in Minnesota and the fact that, you know, you could have a lot of issues there. I mean, they're going to be one of the teams to watch all season. There's no question about it.
Yeah, and of course, I'm down here in Miami, Tim. So, you know, Heat fans are wondering, do the Miami Heat even have pieces when you think about the Richardsons or the Winslows or the Goran Dragic's, obviously Hassan Whiteside, you'd like to deal away that contract, or a young guy like Bam Adebayo. Are the pieces in Miami appealing enough to potentially pull off a trade like that?
No, I don't see the Heat being able to get a guy like him. And that's part of the problem. I mean, last summer could really set them back for a while. You know, you look at all these guys are going to be free agents next summer. You know, typically Miami'd be right at the top of the list for guys who want to go play there, right? But
right.
You look down the list of guys they signed Deion Waiters, who didn't really seem like there was a lot of other teams in the mix for him. You know, Deion basically, you know, he played 30 games last year. He's not ready to start camp. It's kind of unclear when he's going to be able to play. You know, James Johnson, Kelly Olynyk, Tyler Johnson, you know, they matched his contract a couple of years ago. I mean, they paid Whiteside. I mean, they have a lot of guys on the books for a lot of money. And I just don't really see a team's going, "Hey, I really want that guy," right? You know, Justice Winslow maybe could be an interesting player, but he also is in the final year of his deal and he's going to get paid next summer. You know, Bam Adebayo is probably the one piece they've got that you could maybe put in a trade, but, you know, Minnesota already has a pretty good center, so I don't think they need him. And also, if you're the Heat, you kind of need Bam Adebayo to be really good for you, right? I mean, clearly.
Yeah.
The Hassan Whiteside experience has not gone great the last 12 months. So I think that if you look at Bam, that's a guy who you can kind of hope to be your long-term center in the way the NBA is going, with it being faster and more athletic and guys being able to switch. I mean, Bam's an interesting piece. So I think, as unfortunate, as frustrating as it probably is for Heat fans to hear, given the way their team usually is in the mix for everybody, I think they're probably just going to have to sit tight here and try to ride this out for a year or two and start to get closer to the expiration date on some of these deals before they can really get in the mix again.
Great stuff here from Tim Bontemps, national NBA writer for the Washington Post. And kind of on that topic, Tim, as you probably know or can imagine, down here in these parts, Pat Riley is a deity. Pat Riley can walk on water as far as Heat fans are concerned. This Heat team is certainly in a down cycle. Has Riley lost any of his magic, or some of the things that happening here, considering, you know, the cycle that they had going back a few years when the big three were still together, is it kind of inevitable to have a down cycle, or is this a lot of Pat Riley's doing?
Well, I mean, look, you're not going to be able to have, you know, that sustained run of ridiculous success forever, right? I mean, they made it to five finals and won three championships in an 8-year span, or 9 years, whatever, to 10-year span. I mean, that's a crazy level of accomplishment, right? And you had, you know, multiple Hall of Fame players. I mean, to me, all of this goes back to Chris Bosh, right? Like, if Chris Bosh is healthy, And and one of the, you know, he's one of the 15 best. He probably still is one of the 15 best players in the league. And this entire situation looks drastically different, right? I mean, because, you know, you go back to 2014, the Heat keep Chris Bosh. I mean, Chris Bosh was a really, really good player for a clear Hall of Fame player. And he would only be, I think, 32, 33. He had the kind of game that could have aged really well. I mean, that was a guy that should have been the tentpole for this team through the latter half of this decade. And you would have been able, maybe last summer, Gordon Hayward comes to Miami if Chris Bosh is healthy, right? Like, that really is the pivot point for me, because Miami went all in with that Wade-Bosh group after LeBron left. And, you know, once Bosh was not available, you know, it really just kind of left the Heat in a bind, and they had to try to recover. And you can't just snap your fingers and recover from losing a top 15 player. And, you know, I think a lot of people have forgotten about that, just because, you know, obviously when a guy has a situation as unfortunate as Chris, you kind of go out of sight, out of mind, and people just don't think about that. But he still would be under contract with the Heat and would still probably be, I don't think there's any question, he'd be their best player. I mean, imagine if Goran Dragic was running pick and rolls with Chris Bosh.
And to build on that point, I think that's the big reason why they wanted to go out and trade for Goran Dragic. At that time, they didn't know the extent of Bosh's health.
Right, exactly. I mean, they traded for Goran and then basically immediately lost Chris forever, the way it turned out. So, like, you know, that really is the pivot point. I mean, if Chris Bosh had that happen a month earlier, maybe they don't trade for Goran. Maybe things are way different, right? But, like, it just so happened the way it timed out, they just got really unlucky. And, you know, now they're kind of stuck. They don't have their picks. I think they, you know, they liked where they were going as a team. I think they thought they could sign some of those guys to longer-term deals and kind of, you know, maybe have them as trade pieces later. And it just hasn't worked. But, again, when you just lose a top 15 player in the league like that, you know, really, and it's not like they traded him or he left even in free agency. You were building around him, and then he's just gone. That's a really, really difficult thing to come back from. And I think that's a big part of why the Heat are kind of stuck in, you know, in the middle right now in a way they haven't been very often for a long time.
Tim Bontemps this week wrote a great piece in the Washington Post about Mark Cuban and the culture of the Dallas Mavericks. So a 7-month investigation, Tim, into the workplace culture there, resulting in Mark Cuban agreeing to donate $10 million to women's groups. Can you tell us about the findings of that investigation and what were some of the most surprising things to you?
Well, I mean, honestly, none of it was surprising because basically, if anybody listening remembers, back in February, this all started because Sports Illustrated produced a very long, thorough investigative story by the same people, John Wertheim and Jessica Luther, who looked into the stuff surrounding the Carolina Panthers and their owner, Jerry Richardson. They unearthed all this stuff that was just terrible about the workplace culture within the Mavericks. And, you know, frankly, this investigation basically confirmed everything they found and then some. You know, I mean, it was just a really bad place to work. There were no women in executive positions. There were people, you know, watching porn in the office. There were people, you know, the CEO was, you know, repeatedly, you know, seemed to be inappropriately touching women and kind of with impunity. The best thing Mark Cuban could say about the whole thing is that no one seemed to tell him what was going on. He didn't really have anything to do with the business side of his own team. But, like, if blissful ignorance is your best defense, it's not a very good defense, right? So it was obviously a pretty damning report. I'm surprised that Mark Cuban didn't get suspended for some length of time. The fact that the NBA will tell you that he's been very contrite and he immediately instituted all these reforms. He's hired this woman, Cynthia Marshall, to be the team CEO, who's now got half of the executive team as women and is clearly a really impressive person. If anybody saw her on TV yesterday, either on Rachel Nichols' show on ESPN or during the press conference on NBA TV, like, she clearly is an impressive woman, and they seem to have done a lot to change the culture there. But that being said, I think, you know, to me, it would have sent a message if you told Mark Cuban, you can't come to a Mavericks game for 6 months and you can't go to practice for 6 months. Like, you just can't be around this team for 6 months or something, right? Just some kind of message to be sent about being so unaware of the culture within your team. Because it should be noted that, A, the basketball side of things was apparently like a safe haven for women there. They all treated people great, which I think is something that needs to be noted because people hear the Mavericks did the stuff and assume players were involved, and they were not. And, you know, again, if the best thing Cuban could say is that, well, I just didn't know what was going on. I mean, to me, if you're the CEO of the team, the real CEO, the guy who runs the team and owns the team, that's not a good enough answer. And, you know, so I think he should have been suspended. But other than that, I mean, you know, the stuff that happened yesterday, the NBA could only fine him $2.5 million, so he agreed to pay more. I mean, that wasn't really a shock. You know, the stuff in the report was very terrible, but also not really surprising to anybody who had actually paid attention to the initial story that came out about this stuff. So, you know, it's obviously a pretty humiliating day for Cuban, a pretty bad day for the Mavericks, but we'll see if they can turn things around and if, you know, this is a warning sign to other teams in the league, if anybody has any kind of issues like this, to say, hey, we have to improve our workplace and hire more women and hire more diverse teams of people to kind of ensure this stuff doesn't happen anymore.
Very well said. You want to follow Tim on Twitter at Tim Bontemps and check out his work in the Washington Post, including that piece. Tim, thank you so much. I hope you have a great night.
Thank you, too. Appreciate it.
Yeah, good stuff there. And a lot of people, by the way, really appreciated what he said about Chris Bosh and how his unforeseen health situation, it dismantled the Heat's basketball plans. It did. And we're still not recovered from that. 7 o'clock hour coming up. When we come back, we'll talk some Canes. Canes FIU with Andrew Ivins will join us next here on QAM.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.